Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 7, text number 33. Before I begin, I would just like to thank everyone here who is attending this class. It gives me great pleasure to share with everyone these marvelous teachings that Srila Prabhupada has so mercifully given to us. And it gives me great pleasure to serve everyone here. And I thank you all for allowing me to serve you. And I beg for your prayers that I may say something useful and beneficial for all of us, so that we may all go out knowing more today than we did yesterday by Srila Prabhupada's and Lord Krishna's grace. Thank you very much. Tata asadya tarasa tarunam gotami sutam bambandam arshatam praksha pasum rasanayayata tata asadya tarasa Arunam gotami sutam babandam arshatam raksha pashum rashanayayata tata asadhya tarasa arunam gotami sutam Babandam arshatam raksha Pashum rasanayayata This chant. Please. Ataha. Thereupon, Asadhya arrested Tarasa dexterously. Darunam, dangerous. Gotami Sutam, the son of Gotami. Babandha, bound up. Amarsha, angry. Tamra Aksha, with copper red eyes. Pashum, animal. Rashanaya, by ropes. Excuse me. Yata, as it were. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. Please repeat. Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. Purport. Ashvatthama's mother, Kripi, was born in the family of Gotama. He was known as a great sage. The significant point in this shloka is that Ashvatthama was caught and bound up with ropes like an animal. According to Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was obliged to catch this son of a Brahmin like an animal as a part of his duty, his dharma. This suggestion by Sridhar Swami is also confirmed in the later statement of Sri Krishna. Ashvatthama was a bona fide son of Dronacharya and Kripi, but because he had degraded himself to a lower status of life, it was proper to treat him as an animal and not as a Brahmin. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Ummaritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a verse, I don't have it memorized, but I paraphrase it, and it's by Narada Muni, and Narada Muni said that a person should be judged not by his birth title, such as Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, but by his behavior. And based upon his behavior, that's what we should refer to him as or consider him as. So if a person is born as a Sudra, and there were many in Lord Chaitanya's camp, but he acts like a perfect Brahman or a pure devotee, then he should be regarded in that manner. It's in the Bhagavatam, by the way. I'm sorry, I don't know the number. Anybody know that number? So, he should be regarded as a Brahmin. And if a person is a Brahmin, born as a Brahmin, into the caste of the Brahmin, but he acts like a perfect Shudra, or less than that, what they call an untouchable, one of the lower castes, then he should be regarded as that. And that's what we have right here. Ashvatthama was born to two great Brahmins, his mother and his father. And he was raised by them, raised by his great father, Dronacharya, in every respect. He was raised how to behave, how to speak, how to act, how to respect others. He was taught him how weapons. And in the course of this, it was this natural, as fathers and mothers naturally do when they raise their children, they become somewhat attached to them. because they are enjoying, the son or daughter is bringing pleasure to the father and mother. So it is not while they're growing up, when they learn to walk, when they learn to talk, and you hold them up, you hug them, they run away from you, you run after them, you give them a toy and they throw it back at you. All these little things are very charming and very wonderful to watch in the course of a child growing up. So it's only natural for parents to become somewhat attached. Even though Dronacharya was a Brahmin, and he knew that he had to watch out for that, because a true and great Brahmin is detached even from his family. It doesn't mean indifferent. Detached means that he knows he can lose the child at any given moment. He has a sense of past, present, and future immediately. So if something untoward, unfavorable, unexpected happens, then he's not shocked. He's not upset. He may be grievous because, as I said, the child, when he was a child, the youth, when he was a youth, teenager, brought him pleasure. And when someone brings you pleasure, and that person disappears from your midst, and you are not going to see him in that form anymore, there's a sense of grief. Because, for example, when Srila Prabhupada passed on, I was right here when we got the notice. There was a big burst of sorrow. Ah! It was like that. Although we knew it could happen at any time, because Prabhupada had been ailing for weeks. And that was proper. To feel grief for a great personality is what we should feel. And anyone who didn't, his heart must have been made of stone, ice, and whatever else doesn't allow for tears. So many of the devotees, I remember we were just sitting across the street. Nobody was talking. It was very difficult to speak because many had kind of lumps in their throat. Just heads were kind of going like this. Where do we go from here? How does the movement go on? And et cetera, et cetera. But after several days, although we still remember Srila Prabhupada, but the shock of the happening began to attenuate, became lessened and softened. But everyone still felt the grief because there was no one like Srila Prabhupada and no one could replace him. And we all loved to hear, we would hear his lectures, when he came here, I remember June the 6th. How could I ever forget? Srila Prabhupada was sitting right where he's sitting now. And I was given a very special blessing from Rameshwar. He said, what I want you to do, we have all these books over here. So he set up a bookcase right just behind me. And he said, I want you to stand just to the right of Prabhupada. And I want you to keep one eye on Prabhupada and the other on the books. Nobody should take the books. They're not for taking, not for stealing. So what a blessing. I was just standing there. I could feel them when Prabhupada was speaking, the heat of his breath. I could feel it. I don't know how much I could do as far as guarding the books. I'm not much of a guard. I'm more for reading the books. But not so much for guarding. So that went on, and Prabhupada was here four or five days. And I had that same job every day. So when you have to get so close to the spiritual master, and you can hear every word, you can see him looking here and there, you can feel his warmth, his kindness, his sweetness, his affection. It's a great blessing, and I can never forget this. So when Srila Prabhupada left, I could not but help remember that great, blessed 4 or 5 days from June 6th on, I think it was. And I never expected it. I never even hoped for it because I never felt I was worthy of it. And yet it was there, and it will remain an indelible embossment in my mind, hopefully forever, and give me the reason to want to serve Srila Prabhupada as best as he allows me, as best as Krishna allows me. So we have here now Dronacharya, Brahman, and I'm going to make it a comparison. It's so interesting. A great Brahman and a son who is not at all a Brahmin, but only in name. Now, it's interesting about, we were talking about the Brahmastra. In the Mahabharata, it's called Brahmashirsha. So, Arjuna earned it. It's a very fascinating story, how he earned the right to have it and to use it. And he was qualified to have it. It's a fascinating story. The Pandavas and the Kauravas, they were out on, near the Ganges, they were going to bathe. And there was over 100 Kauravas, because they were a big family. And there, of course, is 5 Pandavas. So they were relaxing. We've all been to lake shores, and you talk, and you gab, and you joke, and you kind of sit back, lay back. But Arjuna, no. He was watching Drona Acharya. He didn't take his eyes off him for 1 second. And Drona Acharya wanted to test the waters because there were crocodiles in the waters occasionally. So you have to be aware. You have to watch out. Once a crocodile gets a hold of your thigh, well, we all know the story of Gajendra. I think it was 100 years, and he couldn't get out of the lock. So Dronacharya walked down to the river, and he started walking into the river. Again, Arjuna just watching, gazing at him as his deity, so to speak. And lo and behold, behind Dronacharya, there was a crocodile. And he was getting closer and closer. Now, you can't see the crocodile. All you see is their eyes, these big bulging eyes. I'm sure we've all gone to movies and seen them. So the bulging eyes was there. And Dronacharya, his back was to the crocodile. The crocodile immediately seized one of his thighs. And as soon as he did, Dronacharya shouted, "Crocodile!" Arjuna was out with 5 arrows. Boom, 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 boom. The crocodile was dead within 5 seconds. So all the others, they hadn't even gotten their arrow to the bow. Whereas he's out with 5 arrows. It shows you the kind of devotion he had. It was not for him to relax, lay back, have fun, tell jokes, talk about the weather. Talk about the temperature of the water. Is it cold? Is it going to be okay? Are we going to have some water fights? He was not into that. He was so devoted to Dronacharya. So Dronacharya came out of the water, and he called Arjuna. He said, "Come here." He said, "You are a true disciple. Always at the alert. Always at the ready. And if your spiritual master is in trouble, you're ready to do whatever you know what will save him. And you did that. And I cannot thank you enough." Arjuna has head down. As far as he was concerned, he hadn't done anything. That's the attitude of the pure devotee. I haven't done anything. Because as far as he was concerned, it was par for the course. What else should I do? Oh, you know, all my cousins and brothers, they're all there having fun. That's not my duty. He wanted to be one of the greatest warriors in the world. So, to do that, you fall in love with one of the greatest warriors in the world, which, of course, Dronacharya was one of the greatest. Bhishma Dev probably being the greatest, because he had he even fought with his with his own guru for 23 days. They had a fight. It was going to be a fight to the death. But Ganga, his mother, she broke it up. She didn't want to see her son, Bhishma Dev, die. And she didn't like the idea of him fighting with his guru. It's a whole story in itself. But Parashuram asked him to do something, to marry Amba, because he had touched her in trying to gain her for Vichitravirya. But he wouldn't. He said, "No, I can't marry her. I've already taken a vow that I will not marry, and I will not be the king. This is a vow. And in fact, my father has given me a great blessing as a result of some of these things." Yeah. So father gave him the blessing that no one could kill him unless he desired to be killed. And that was in exchange for Bhishma Dev gaining the hand of Satyavati, who had a fragrance of musk which carried for about 2 miles. Interestingly enough, she was born in a fish's mouth, in the belly of a fish. She came out, and her body had the odor of a fish. And wherever she went, although she was beautiful, nobody wanted to go near her because she smelled like a fish. So anyway, she took it up with one of the great sages, and she begged from him a blessing that she could smell like musk. And he gave her that blessing, and from that time on, any man who came near was attracted. And Shantanu, who was Bhishma's father, was no different. Already Ganga had left him, and it was time. And so anyway, what happened was that Bhishmadev was willing to give up his right to be the king and his right to be a father, to his right to be a husband. He gave all that up just so his father could marry Satyavati, who was the daughter of a fisherman, and the fisherman steadfastly would not give her unless Bhishmadev agreed to give up those two particular accomplishments, which was to be the king and which to be married. Because he did that, he gave to Bhishmadev to give to his father Satyavati. Bhishmadev went to his father, who was sitting on the throne. He says, "Here, my gift to you, father." He said, "What do you mean?" And he explained. The father made him start crying. He gave up something that hardly anyone would ever think of giving up. That's not only did he give up a very great position, but he was most qualified in the entire kingdom, if not the world, to be the king and to be a father and to have progeny who would be like himself. So Shantanu said, "My dear son," he said, "there is no way I can repay you for this." He said, "All the sacrifices that I have performed over the years have given me an amassment of wealth, of a wealth of spiritual merit, and I'm going to give much of that to you right now. You will never die unless you want to die." Therefore, nobody could kill Bhishmadev. It was like we have curses and we also have blessings, and that was the blessing that he had gotten. So coming back to what I had started to talk about, Drona was very much like an animal. Remember what he did. At night, I think it was the 17th night of the war, the Battle of Kurukshetra, he and Kripacharya and one other warrior, they went into the barracks of where the Pandavas were. Not just the five Pandavas were someplace else, but the five sons of Draupadi, they were there. They're Pandavas, of course. And there were scores and scores of other warriors lying there asleep. It was dead of night. And they tiptoed into it. And they had swords and cleavers, knives. And the first person that Ashvatthama approached was Drishtadyumna, the general of the Pandava army. Why did he approach him? Because he was the one who decapitated his father, Dronacharya. So he wouldn't even give him a fair fight. He wouldn't wake him up and say, "Let's fight to the death." He just took his cleaver off with his head. And then he went from one of the sons of Draupadi at five to another, and he just chop, 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 chop. That was not the end. This was a mass murder. Like we heard of the mass murder in Las Vegas, the guy was up there on the balcony with a machine gun, ta, 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 and down below there was a concert going on. Everyone was a sitting duck. Over 50 people, 53 people, I think, were shot, and so many other injured. Mass murders. Yeah, they had them then there. And so Ashvatthama was a mass murder. Confirmed. Ashvatthama was a mass murderer. He not only killed the five, and not only killed Drishtadyumna, but he killed all the warriors who were in that barrack. Chop, 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 chop. And then he took the five heads of the sons of Draupadi, put them in some kind of a basket, brought them to Duryodhana. And here, my king, I have a present for you. Duryodhana was not at all pleased. We would think that he might be pleased, but he wasn't pleased. Because although he was a horrible wretch, he was an envious, good-for-nothing. Still, he must have had one little pinch, one tiny little particle of sense of righteousness, warrior righteousness. Warrior righteousness means that you don't kill indiscriminately. A great warrior, or even an ordinary warrior, does not kill an enemy who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, and they were asleep, afraid. If he doesn't want to fight you, you can't kill him, you can't fight him. Or devoid of his chariot. So, Ashvatthama acted like a perfect brute. And as the purport says, he acted like a brute and he deserved to be treated like a brute. And that's why Krishna says, you tie him up. And he tied him up and he was going to deliver him, you know, like you deliver an animal that you have captured or trapped for her decision, whatever she would want. So this was his vengeance. Now, the qualities of a Brahmin are as follows. A person who's really a Brahmin. First of all, peacefulness is one of the qualities. Self-control is another quality, which obviously Ashvatthama showed no self-control whatsoever. Austerity. He did have austerities under his father's tutelage. Purity, very little. In spite of the fact that he grew up with a wonderful Brahmin, but he switched allegiance from his father, Dronacharya, who taught him well, to whom? To Duryodhana. And Duryodhana, as I have already said, was full of envy and hatred and lust and greed. All the bad qualities, and so those bad qualities, by association, rubbed off on Ashvatthama, and he became like Dronacharya, even worse. Because even Dronacharya wouldn't accept those five heads. Excuse me, Duryodhana wouldn't accept, thank you, the five heads. But to Ashvatthama, he was doing a great deed, heroic. It was the most cowardly, dastardly act one a warrior could ever perform. So, as I mentioned, purity, tolerance, qualities of Brahman, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiosity. These are the qualities of a Brahman. And obviously, Ashvatthama was very bereft of these qualities. Now, let's make a comparison between him and his father, to show you the lack of self-control in one and the magnificent control in another. When Dronacharya was told on the battlefield, he was told by Yudhishthira. Now, Yudhishthira didn't like to, he would never tell a lie. And there was a lot of noise going on the battlefield, roaring and shouting and screaming and cursing, and horses running back and forth, neighing, rearing, elephants trumpeting, all this noise is going on. So Dronacharya had been told that Ashvatthama has been killed. So he wouldn't believe it unless Yudhishthira would confirm that, because Yudhishthira didn't lie. So he went to Yudhishthira and said, is my son dead? And he said, Ashvatthama the elephant is dead. He whispered it, so he couldn't hear it. And yet at the same time, it wasn't a lie, because the Ashwatthama, an elephant, was killed by Bhima in order to make the word true. It's just as much a lie. But in any event, when Dronacharya heard that, he could have reacted in two different ways. The first way, if he was in the mode of passion and ignorance, as his son was, he would have said, "Who did it? Who's the culprit?" And out of vengeance, gone after him and killed him or tormented him in such some way. He didn't act that way. What did he do? He sat down on his chariot. He closed his eyes. He put his hands on his knees. Fingers in the, what they call the knowledge or Gyan Mudra. And began entering within to leave his body and enter samadhi. That's the way he reacted. Self-control par excellence. You can't beat that. But when Ashwatthama heard that his father had been killed, true, in an unfair way, all he had on his mind was vengeance, 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 kill, kill, kill. Just see the difference. Father, peaceful. Son, vengeful. Now, interestingly enough, I was looked this up last night. Actually, Dronacharya did not want to give the Brahmastra. He didn't want to give it to his son, because he knew he was not yet qualified to receive it, which means he could have misused it. So, then why did he give it to him? Well, when Arjuna, remember, I narrated the part where he saved with his arrows, he saved Dronacharya. So the gift that Dronacharya gave him was the Brahmastra. That was his gift. He says, "I am very beholden to you, I'm very grateful to you, and you deserve this. Because you love your guru so much that you sacrifice all the play and the frivolity and playfulness that all the cousins and friends, and because you didn't want to let me out of your sight, I give you this gift." So when Ashwatthama heard that Arjuna had received something that he himself had not gotten, and after all, he's the son, he said, "Father, please give me the Brahmastra." He said, "No, not now. You're not ready for it." A month goes by. "Father, can you please give me the Brahmastra?" "No, not now. You're not ready for it." He knew he was not ready for it, and that meant he could misuse it. Finally, after pestering and pestering, out of affection, and perhaps a wrong kind of affection, the kind of attachment that a father can have for a son, just to pacify him, without realizing the further, the larger implications that this could have, although he did realize them initially. But sometimes out of attachment, and you want to please your son, you want to please your daughter, you want to take away the distress, you want to take away the upset they're feeling. Okay, so he gave it to him, but he hadn't completed the teaching. He taught him how to release it, but he hadn't yet taught him how to withdraw it. Arjuna knew how to release it. He knew how to withdraw it. In fact, that's what happens here. The two Brahmastras are up there, and there's a big, gigantic fire. It can destroy the whole universe. And Krishna said to Arjuna, "Just withdraw them, neutralize them," in other words. So he did that. So this is the difference. These are the qualities of a Brahmin. So how does this affect us? What does this do for us? It tells us that we should be trying to acquire these wonderful qualities of peacefulness, self-control. Not just know them, not just memorize them so we can give it to a class like this, but to actually manifest them. We cannot manifest these qualities unless we get the grace of Guru and Krishna. They're not going to come just by our devotional service. They're very special gifts. And when we pray to have these qualities, please, Lord, you have them. Narada Muni has them. Lord Brahma has it. Please enable me to have this quality or these qualities. And you beg, and you beg, and you beg. And every time we do some service, every time we make a sacrifice, every time we cry out in some way, do something nice for somebody, and pay some thank you, in our hearts we're saying, oh Lord, it was not I who did that for which I am being thanked. It was you who did it, and you did it through me, and I thank you so much for using me as an instrument, a loving instrument of your heart. And I cannot thank you enough, but please, I know I am not complete. I know I am still full of impurity. I know I am still full of taint. So please, please, please remove the taint. Remove the ugliness. Remove the fallen. Now, this may even be a pure devotee who's got all good qualities, but he sees one little iota of taint there. He's begging, please, I don't want there to be any obstacle to the love of my heart reaching your heart. And that little bit of taint is preventing me from loving you and serving you the way you deserve to be. Please help me to become peaceful, fully self-controlled, austere. Make me pure. Make me fully tolerant. Help me to be honest. And maybe I have some of these qualities or part of those qualities. Make me better so that I can serve you better. Make me better so that I can serve you more. So that I can help others who are suffering to get out of their suffering, to be relieved of that suffering. And to be able to share that peace that they get, that love that they get, that contentment that they get. They share it with others, and every person they deal with becomes peaceful and joyful and satisfied and knowledgeable, truthful, and the like. So that's the way the devotee prays, not just for himself, give me these good qualities, but give me them so that I can share them, and those who receive those which I shared can share them with others. Lord Chaitanya demonstrated this principle very well when he was traveling down towards South India. He was chanting the holy name, but he injected into it such a potency that those who received the holy name, they couldn't stop chanting it. And they would chant it to their brothers, their sisters, their cousins. And what happened was that it was what you call holy name in perpetual motion. So one person had it, then he couldn't stop chanting it. And then he chanted it to his friend or his brother or whatever, and then he couldn't stop chanting. Everyone was chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Everyone was turned on to the holy name. And that's how Lord Chaitanya was able to spread this holy name to so many people, because although he was one mouth, from that one mouth, thousands of mouths chanted the holy name. He didn't do that up in Bengal. He did that while he was traveling, remember. So we see what our goal has to be. The ultimate goal is pure love of Krishna, pure love of Radha, pure love of Srila Prabhupada, pure love of these wonderful books that we have. We show our love for the books by whenever we get an opportunity, we want to give out a book. So, and we don't brag about it either, because we never think we're the doer. We're always thinking, thank you, Krishna, for enabling me. Thank you, Krishna, for permitting me. Thank you, Krishna, for arranging for me to distribute all these wonderful books. I give all credit to you, and I thank you. When everybody compliments me, I accept the compliment graciously, but in my heart of hearts, I immediately get rid of it so that I don't be filled with the pride, this pelf of pride of thinking that I'm good, I'm great, I'm wonderful, I'm superior, nobody's doing what I'm doing, just see my opulence. No, I don't want that. I just want to be your simple, loving servant and nothing more. And that's the way I will regard myself. As soon as I have received praise, honor, glorification, applause, the first thing, although outwardly I am graciously receiving it, inwardly it goes right to Prabhupada. And then I watch Prabhupada in my mind giving it to Krishna. And I'm free. I'm out of jail. I'm able to be in such a way as that I never did it. And if I never did it, then I'm free of the possibility of the pride, the arrogance, the sense of superiority, the condescension, all these things which destroy a spiritual life, and which I've seen so many lives destroyed by persons not giving away all this. Why don't we give it away? Because we love, the ego loves to feel big and great and grand. We still want to be God. And every fraction of that desire must be completely eliminated. The false ego must be burned, burned, burned till it's a zero. And when there's no more false ego and there's only the real ego, mainly the soul, with all its wonderful, beautiful, lovable qualities, then we become perfect instruments of Srila Prabhupada, Lord Krishna, all the great souls, and we continue to receive their countless, endless, wonderfulness of their blessings. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.